All right, let me turn off this light and we will get started. Did everybody, first of all, for those of you who are not here for the lecture, I'm Sydney Kirst Dixon. And today, for those of you who don't know how to plat land, you're going to be learning how to plat land. So it is lots of fun. It is definitely a challenge, but once you learn how to do it, it will help you in so many ways. All right, we're going to do a quick review of some of the things that Frank already went over, so we'll go through the first part of it, and then we'll get going on our practicum. Everyone bring their land compass.
Yes.
Yes, everybody bring their little ruler.
Yeah.
Yes.
And did everybody bring something to a calculator of some kind?
Yes, yeah, on my phone.
What, on your phone? Okay, good. Because we are definitely running, what was that? We are definitely running calculations today. The problem I'm going to give you has more calculations than most, but I think it's a great one to learn on. So, all right, here we go. First of all, genealogical value of land records. They put a person in a particular time and place. They contain references to other family members, friends, associates, and neighbors. If the land is transferred through inheritance, the deed may name all the children and the heirs. So that's why if you are ever having a brick wall, if you haven't checked land records, you haven't hit a brick wall. You just haven't finished your search. I would say the same thing with probate records as well. They may describe a particular relationship, eldest son. You see this a lot because very often, who is the person that's going to be inheriting the land? The eldest son. All right, and it helps to distinguish between two people with the same name. So if you have people where you have generation after generation and you have the eldest son being named, all of a sudden, your land records can help you distinguish because if you have cousins in the same township, if they own different pieces of land, and you can determine that through a deed with their wife's name on it, and we're going to get to that in just a second, it can help you tremendously. And it will also indicate the occupation, age, and or religion of the parties. So deeds can give you an awful lot of information other than a land description. But, of course, in this, when we do the practicum, we're going to be focusing on that land description. All right, it can suggest the wives' maiden names. The only way I've seen this done in deeds is when the husband and wife have inherited the land through the wife's family. So that's when in the recital clause of the deed, you may see that. But it's incredibly important because sometimes maiden names can be very difficult. And if you haven't gotten the deeds, you always need to look at them because this is an excellent way to try to capture that maiden name if you have no other clues. Often, the signature of the wife is included with a grantor's signature in indicating the relinquishment of dower rights. How many of you know what dower rights are?
There's two different kinds of dower rights.
What?
There's two different kinds of dower rights, right?
Well, they're... What two different kinds do you mean? I'm
what
not
comes
sure.
From the parents of the wife to the wife, and then what you have here.
Okay, well, the ones that we are going to be talking about today are really when you have a husband who is selling his land. And the reason why in the state of Pennsylvania, for a long time, the rule was if a husband dies, the wife is entitled to a third of the land that he owns. And she may live on a third of that land until she dies, and she may keep the money of any kind of crop that is produced on that land. If she sells it, that's all hers. So the reason why the wife's signature has to be on there is if a husband sold the land and did not tell the wife, and the person that bought it didn't say, well, aren't you married? Where's your wife's signature? When that man died, the wife could then go to the person that bought the land and said, a third of it, I get to live on, and I get to recoup any of the money of the crops that are being produced on there. So you were a fool if you bought land and you did not make sure that the wife's signature was on there or made sure he wasn't married. So that's why. And I will say, most times I've never seen a wife sign in her maiden name. I've seen her just sign her given name, her first name, or I've seen her sign her maiden name. But I've never seen a signature with a maiden name. Maybe you might get lucky where a woman might, when she gets married, she goes from, let's say, many women take their maiden name as their middle name. Maybe you might get lucky, and instead of just Sydney Dixon, it would be Sydney Cruz Dixon.
Okay. You said you don't often see the maiden name, the married name, it's usually.
I beg your pardon?
It's usually the married name.
Yes, it usually is the married name. So, okay. All right. It can indicate the level of education by the inclusion of the person's signature or mark. So if you see an X, his mark or her mark, that's telling you something. Again, giving you more information. And using in conjunction with tax lists, probate records, census records, you can reconstruct an entire neighborhood. And that can be very important if you are having issues with, all right, who was the person that was, you know, I had one person who could not read a census record. They believed it was their person, but the name had been butchered so many times by a census enumerator, they weren't sure. So they actually reconstructed the neighborhood, and they were able to figure out the path of the enumerator. And therefore, they were able to figure out that, yes, indeed, this family, it was the family that they were looking for. So there are lots of different ways that you can use this. Right, it can help you locate church, cemeteries, and schools for further research. So if you're able to pinpoint exactly what township someone's, exactly where in the township they're living, all of a sudden it can help you better target the schools. Thank you so much, Chris. That's fabulous. It can help you better target the schools, the churches, anything else, neighbors, etc., that you want to target for your search. And then since they're presented and certified in open court, these records are highly reliable. The information in there is way more reliable than many other documents that never get certified in court. All right. Elements of deed, and again, I know Frank went over this, the date the deed was written and signed, the name and location of the grantor, the seller, and the grantee, the buyer, consideration, the amount of money, property, work, gifted, token, or exchange, and a detailed description of the property. This is what we're going to be taking apart today, the legal land description. And of course, that will also indicate neighbors and previous owners who can be named in this. If you do a transcription of a deed, just like with the rest of it, it has to be exact. Now, if you do an abstract, you know you can pull out different parts. The legal land description, you cannot change in any way, even in an abstraction. I'm going to say that again. You cannot change the legal land description in any way, even in an abstraction. It has to be exactly as it appears in the original deed. And the recital clause, if present, states how the seller acquired the land. And again, it's that recital clause where you're going to get a lot of your information. And that can indicate, and be careful with this, even though, make sure you investigate the people that they are getting this land from, even if they have different surnames. Because it could be the wife's family, it could be a cousin. Very often there are family relationships. So you always need to investigate who the people were that they got the land from. And when they dispose of the land, who the people are that they are disposing that land to. All right, specification of any special circumstances, warranty clause found in the simple deeds. This is where if you have a mortgage, if you're going to see quid rents, it's going to be in this section. And then, of course, the grantor's signature and mark and seal. And again, if he's married, his wife's signature, relinquishing her dower rights. In the state of Pennsylvania, they also had at one point a law where the person that was witnessing this deed when it was created, when the transaction was after the execution date of the deed, had to take the wife into a separate room and explain the meaning of her signing this and what that meant. And you will see at the bottom of a lot of deeds that paragraph that says this was explained to her in, you know, not in the presence of her husband, so that if she did not want to go through with this, she could tell that person. However, very admirable law, but the problem is she still had to go home with him at the end of the day. So I'm not sure how much that law helped, but that was an attempt to try to make sure that a woman wasn't being bulldozed into relinquishing her dower rights. All right, signature of witnesses, the examination certification of the deed in open court, and the date the deed was recorded and registered. And we all know that the date the deed was recorded and registered can be very, very different from the date it was executed. You can have 100 years difference in between the two. Because if something is passing through a family, nobody's contesting it. It's not being sold. It's just being passed down. But then all of a sudden, when a member of that family decides they want to sell that land, the person buying it, there needs to be in the recital clause, and sometimes you get very long recital clause where it says it went from this person to this person to this person to this person. Sometimes you're even going to see in the recital clause, well, we meant to record it with the last sale, but we didn't. So it's being recorded now. So you really have to look at the recital clause. All right. Okay, locating deeds, usually found in county offices and courthouse, sometimes found at the municipal level, and it would be under the recorder of deeds, register of deeds, county clerk's office. So depending on where you're looking, you can find them in various places. All right, most areas have grantor-grantee indexes. Sometimes they're tract indexes. They have these more in urban areas, and they will give something a lot number. And then there are published deed abstracts in historical societies. You can get deeds through the family history library, probate and court records, manuscript collections, and you need to make sure you are considering the county boundary changes. Why? Because the records stay with the old county. If you have a county that is created out of one county. For example, Montgomery County and Philadelphia County. All of Montgomery County was created out of Philadelphia County. But guess what? When Montgomery County was created, they didn't take all the records from Philadelphia County and send them out to Montgomery County. They all stayed in Philadelphia County. They are in City Hall right now. So you need to look online. The Newberry Library has a wonderful interactive county boundary change map, and you can get it on there. So you always need to first check the date that your person may have lived in that county, see if there were any county changes. If there were, you are going to have to check in any possible county that it might have been in. So you always have to consider that when you're trying to find these records. And then three things to know and ask when you're looking for deeds: where was the land? And again, very often we don't know that. And in most situations when we're looking for things, we know this person owned land, so we're looking for their name. So the grantor or grantee indexes are going to help you with that. But again, you need to have some idea of where the land was. And when we go over the grantor grantee indexes and what's contained in there, it will usually say what township it's in. What county was the land located during the research period, which we just went over, and where are the records now? So again, that has to do with county boundaries. And then information found in deed indexes, it's going to have both the grantor and the grantee names, usually. As soon as I say this, somebody's going to say, oh, well, I went to thus and such, and they didn't have all this. That's true, but in most cases, they do have these things. The date the deed was recorded, the transaction, so whether it's a deed, power of attorney, mortgage, etc., a brief description of the property, so it'll have the number of acres and the location. When I say location, the closest it's usually going to get is just going to be the township. And the volume and page numbers of the deed's location in the clerk's record books. So hopefully, and then, of course, the date of the transaction, because that's going to be different than the date of it's recorded. Do they all have these? No. But most of them have this information. All right, strategies using land records. You always want to check 1850, 60, 70, and census, and 1900s through 1940s census. They all ask the question of property. I do want to make sure you understand that property is not the same as real property. Real property is land. Personal property or property can be other things besides land. All right, so and again, right here, referred to as real estate or real property. Tax records, probate records, and court records can indicate whether your ancestor owned land. So again, you always want to make note when you're going through those. And it's true with any record. When you're looking at any record, you also want to look for clues as to what are the next set of records I need to look for. All right, and you want to identify when and how your ancestor acquired the land and when and how they disposed of the land. And again, remember, there can be a huge difference between when a transaction took place and when they recorded it. But you always want to keep track of it. And again, they may have acquired it in small little pieces and then got rid of it all at once, or they may have acquired a huge piece of land and got rid of it in pieces. So you want to be counting up that acreage. You want to make sure that if this amount goes in, that amount went out. Okay, and sometimes you need to research the neighboring land deeds and witnesses to understand and solve difficult cases. Definitely. Again, that FAN principle. And I always say collateral, family, friends, associates, and neighbors. All right, now, state land states, and these are the state land states, and these are the ones that were never owned by the federal government. And these are the states that you are going to see meets and bounds. Sometimes you see them in the federal land states. That's usually when, prior to the federal government, before 1776, someone already had what they call a private claim on the land. So in other words, they had already contracted with the Spanish government down in Florida to own this property. So even when the federal government, or excuse me, not let's say Louisiana, they had already contracted with France or the Spanish government to own this property, and they were able to prove it. And some of these private claims you will find in government records, and it took them sometimes 50 years to settle. Huge amount of information and a great deal of genealogical information, because we're talking about multiple generations. So if ever you do have somebody in a federal land state other than these, but it's not making sense to you, I mean, it's meets and bounds, understand that was probably a private claim, private land claim. All right, the meets and bounds survey system. Is there anyone here that does not understand the federal land survey system? All of you are familiar with that. Excellent. So I'm not going to say. All right. So meets and bounds was the system that was that most people used. And again, not every state. Some states used different forms of land measure. But you will find this is the most used way of measuring land in 13 colonies. And but you're going to see different land measures in different states. Delaware, 100s. You're going to see that. And then up in New England, I'm blanking on the term, but they do a different form of land measure with some of the communities up there. All right. And it was sometimes called the indiscriminate survey system because land was chosen indiscriminately of the measuring process. Keep in mind, people would go out and they would say, ooh, I want this tract of land. And then they'd hire a surveyor, the surveyor would measure it, and that's the amount of land that they would contract to buy. The problem with that is that, guess what? Nobody wants to buy the awful marshland or the incline that's like this, that nobody can grow anything or build anything on it. So that's why, that's one of the main reasons why the federal government did that nice grid. Also, the grid for the federal system allowed easy identification of exactly where the land was. So that's why you're going to see an indiscriminate survey system. There's a huge difference. And as I said, one of the difficult things with the meets and bounds is exactly where is it located in the township. And honestly, very often when you're trying to anchor that piece of land, you have to try and do it with a road, a waterway, neighbors. It can be very difficult. But hopefully you'll see after today how you can do that. All right. This and again, this is a survey system used in most of the state land states. All right. Meters refer to the angles or corners and the descriptive markers of the land, and bounds refer to the boundary lines of the land. All right. First of all, you want to make a photocopy of your deed or transcribe your deed. I would highly recommend transcribing the deed because when you do that, it helps you identify if the person, who the clerk who copied that down in the deed book, made a mistake. Because you can recognize it. So I would always recommend transcribing your deed, not just trying to plat it straight from the photocopy. All right, and here's the photocopy. And then, of course, the one we're going to do is Henry Mahan and Thomas Dugdale. It says Henry Mahan to Thomas Dugdale. Henry Mahan is the grantor, Dugdale the grantee. So then you're going to locate the legal land description in the deed. It is usually indicated with the words beginning at or beginning. So in this case, right in here, and lucky for all of you, here it is. But I have done a transcription for you, so you don't need to do that. All right, when you are first looking at this, you need to start to identify, okay, and you want to identify the separate elements of the calls. So you want to circle the corners, including the neighbors that correspond to that corner. And you want to underline the boundary lines, and that will include the direction and the distance and the adjoining neighbors. So you're going to be underlining a whole lot more with the boundary lines than you are the corners. So, for example, beginning as a black oak, corner to John Rogers and Thomas Wetherill. So that's telling me I'm going to start at a place, there's a black oak there, and it meets right at the corner of John Rogers' land and Thomas Wetherill's land. And then the boundary that gets underlined is going to be fence along the line of Rogers, south 11 degrees and 15 minutes east, 8 chains and 89 links. Wow. Okay, let's break that line apart. So we know it's going to run along Rogers Land, John Rogers Land, and south 11 degrees and 15 minutes east. Put a line through there. Because right there, and you could even put a line after Rogers to make it easier for you. Rogers is indicating the neighbors. The south 11 degrees and 15 minutes east is indicating your angle. And then 8 chains and 89 links is indicating how long your boundary line is going to extend from that corner. So what I want you to do now is I want you to take the transcription that I gave you, and I want you to go through it, and I want you to circle and underline. I want you to circle all the meets, and then I want you to underline all the boundaries. So take, yes. Okay, they were sent out to you last night, but luckily we have some over here. Sorry.
I didn't check.
That's all right. Not to worry. It was late. Can I get a copy? Absolutely. We have extra copies for that very reason. There you go.
And maybe turn on the front light.
Oh, yes. We'll turn on the overhead light so people can.
So you were saying go through and do what again?
You are going to be going through, first of all, you want to identify the legal land description, so it's right up here, but yours starts, the copy of your deed, there's more to it than the legal land description. So start at the legal land description. You'll see on here I have folded beginning. And then you want to go through the legal land description, and you want to circle just up there where it says beginning as a large black oak corner to John Rogers and Thomas Weatherall's house. Thomas Weatherall's
end.
Yes. So remember what we're doing here is we are now circling the corners, including the neighbors, and underlining the boundary lines that include the direction the boundary line is going to run, the distance the boundary line is going to go, and the adjoining neighbors. And what that looks like for the first two calls, this is the first meet up here, and then the first boundary is underlined. So take that transcription and start going through that. Yes?
What does 2D stand for?
2D, that was very interesting. Sometimes that never appears. That was something unusual, this. I haven't seen it with a lot of others. But I think he's then saying right there, okay, this is the next, this is the beginning of the next boundary line.
Okay.
As you go through it, you're going to see third, you're going to see, you know,
oh, like,
do you see?
One,
he's
two,
giving you a clue. The person that did that, here's second, here's third, okay. Where's fourth? Here's fourth,
okay.
And there's fifth.
They're just points.
In most,
okay.
As you start doing it, you're going to see he's giving you a tip-off,
okay.
Where the next boundary line call starts.
So instead of using, like, thence or viz or...
He's also using that.
Right.
Keep looking.
So, but do they mean different things or it's all one?
You are going to have to understand that every time you look at a deed, it's going to be a little bit different than the next one. Okay. The way they give, the way they measure, they may do it in feet, they may do it in chains and links, they may do it in purchases, they may do it in rods, they may do it in all kinds of distances. You never know what you're going to run into. And this one's a little bit of a challenge because they're doing it in chains and links, and that means we're going to have to convert those. Fun. Now, is everybody seeing how this is working? And I truly need to emphasize with all of you, every deed is going to be a little different. And I am a firm believer that it's a really good idea when you are doing this to run it by somebody else. I did this with Frank because, honestly, two, John Rogers and Thomas Wetherills, that could be of the corner. But two, you could interpret that as, okay, you start here and it's going to the other corner. It's not. But that was something I wanted to talk to Frank about. So I am a firm believer, always take a look at it, but then have someone else look at it, because every deed you're going to look at is going to be a little different. Some of them are going to have these nice little tip-off numbers to tell you when you're going from the corner into the boundary line call, and some of them aren't. Some of them will have the nice fence. Some of them don't. Some of them just keep running it all together. So you're going to have to get used to it. And I truly believe with some of these things, even when they are describing it word for word, sometimes understanding exactly what they're trying to communicate can be confusing. The more you do, the better it's going to be. But I'm telling you, you may have one, and again, this initially, when I first did it, was tripping me up. All right, now we are going to abstract the calls onto a land platting call sheet. And I sent that out to you. Who needs copies? I have extra ones here. This is the blank one, land platting call sheet. And again, you want to do this. And I know it may seem like a lot of extra steps, but I'm telling you, it can get very confusing when you're doing it, and it's very easy to mix up numbers. So if you just do it step by step and break it down piece by piece, because the one we're doing here, other than the fact that it's giving you chains and links, it's pretty easy. This only has, what, five corners? That's not a lot. Wait till you get something that has 20. And then all of a sudden, it's really important that you break it down. So just get into the habit of doing these. You now have the call sheet, the blank one, on your computer so you can do it. And you may want to change it and move it around and make it your own, by all means. All right, let's take a look at it. All right. What we're going to be doing now is we're going to be abstracting each of these. So the first one here we're going to do, it's beginning at the large oak corner to John Rogers and Thomas Wetherills. So on your call sheet, at beginning at, you're going to put black oak tree. Can everyone see that? And in the neighbor section, what are we going to put there? What was that? John?
Okay, yeah, I'm sorry, never mind.
That's okay. John Rogers and Thomas Wetherill. Corner of John Rogers and Thomas Wetherill. So what does that mean? That's the corner where John Rogers and Thomas Wetherill's land come together. All right. Now, and of course, direction to, that's why I have those blanked out, so you can't get mixed up. The next one, now we're going to do the boundary line. So, along the line of said Rogers, south, 11 degrees and 15 minutes east. So, let's first take the part of that. Line along said Rogers, south. So, what's that? Where's that going to go?
Number one is direction.
Well, okay, yeah. All right. I'll tell you what. Let's hold off on to that one, because sometimes you will find the neighbor's description at the end, in the middle, or the beginning. So let's look at the next part where it says south 11 degrees and 15 minutes east. So where would that go? Yes. Now you're going to see the neighbors, though, first. John Rogers, because that's the line is running along John Rogers' property, and the direction is south 11 and a quarter east. And I'm going to explain to you how to interpret that direction, but for now I just want you to understand how to abstract it onto the call sheet. And then let's go back. So then it's, so we now have the direction here, south 11 degrees and 15 minutes east, and the distance is 8 chains and 89 links. So let's go back here. The distance is 8 chains and 89 links. Now, we're not going to do the conversion part of this right now, okay? I have that on my slide. But right now, what I want you to do is I want you to just start going through and doing this. So that, so for the next one, let's look at the next corner. Because here we have to a stone, corner two, Henry C. Deacon. So what's that going to look like on the call sheet? It's a stone. And the neighbors, corner of Henry C. Deacon. Now, I number my stones. And unless it gives a more descriptive thing, if it says a black oak, but you may find in a deed, it may give you four oaks. It may do red oak, black oak, etc. I number them if they have multiple stones. Or stakes. You'll see in this one it has two stones and two stakes. I numbered them just so it can make it easier for me. All right. Whoops. Let's go back. So I want you to keep going through this, and based on your circles and your underlines, fill in the rest of your call sheet. And if everybody just wants to raise their hand when they're... Okay. Anybody need more time? All right, now we'll get started. Okay, because we still have the platting to do. All right. Okay, now, I did give you answer sheets. I'm going to ask you, okay, this is what we're platting. You can look at the answer sheets. For now, ignore the conversion part of it over here. But take a look and see how you did. So, when we're looking at it, again, the first one was south 11 and a quarter east, 8 chains and 89 links. And then we came to the next one, stone number one, was at the corner of Henry C. Deacon. And then it also indicated in here, let me get this. It says, to a stone, corner, Henry C. Deacon. And then it says, along the line of said Deacon, south, 56 degrees and 30 minutes. And because of Frank's wonderful lecture where we know that there are 60 minutes to every degree. We know that that's a quarter and this is a half. West, and then that is 8 chains and 50 links. Then it comes to a stone in the middle of the great road leading from Mount Holly to Burlington. So there we go. Then it says, fence along said road. So, along Mount Holly Road, and I could have put Burlington in here, I was trying to save space, And then it says north, 34 degrees and 30 minutes, so 34 and a half. And it was north, 34 degrees and 30 minutes west. And the distance was 13 chains and 84 links. Okay, continue checking. Is everybody clear on how you you abstract from the deed to your call sheet? All right. Now, with this particular deed, the real fun comes in. So why don't you check the rest of your answers and make sure, see where you, if yours match up. Always a possibility that I've made a mistake too, so you want to check the work. Actually, on the next sheet, there is a mistake.
Yours or
mine?
Else?
Oh, definitely.
Okay.
No, mine.
Okay.
Mine.
So I read that, that line that said where the sun comes into it as a separate.
I know. That one is particularly confusing. So, in essence, what that was saying is to the set where it says right. To a stake in the middle of the of said road corner to the set. And again, if I could have made that one circle, all one circle, I would have. Okay, to the said Thomas Wetherill, and now his son John Wetherill Jr. And then it says, and intended to be conveyed by him to said Dugdale. Now, that's a little added piece of information that they're giving you. But that's not changing what the corner is. The corner is to the said Thomas Wetherill and now his son, John Wetherill Jr. So that's why on... when you go back here.
So I did read that different then because I read it.
Oh, wait, hold on. This one is not right. I had an earlier one where I corrected. Hold on. No. Oh. No, I didn't. I know I corrected it. Oh, well. Okay, so in this one, back to it. On your sheet, it is corrected. Do you see? I do not include this line in there. That's just what they're saying may happen to that land at a later date. But that's irrelevant for our platting exercise. All right, any other questions before we? Okay. So how did everybody, when you look at the answer sheet, how did you do? Does it make sense to you now how you're doing this? And again, you may find later you might not want to break it down as much. Some people then draw slashes in between where the direction begins and ends and where the distance. It's totally up to you. I'm just trying to make sure you are dividing it in between the meets and the bounds and separating it all out, and then abstracting it. All right, now you get to turn over, and I don't have a slide for this, so we're going to have to work from this sheet, your land platting conversions. Now, in this particular case, in order to plat this, we need to have one number. You can't, to try and plat eight chains and so many links, I was converting them all to feet, and then I converted them to purchase. Now, let me explain why. If I just converted it to feet, and you tried to measure that with our ruler, you were going to go off your graph paper. So I'm trying to get it down to a number that is small enough that I can graph on a piece of paper, and large enough so that you really can see the shape of the piece of ground you're platting. Because, and some people say, oh, well, I like to always plat, and I always do it down to the USGS, which is the U.S. Genealogical Survey map. I always do it to that size, and I'm trying to find when I plotted that. It's in here. But it ends up being about that small. I don't know about you, but I can't see the definition and the real shape of that piece of land. Nor is it helpful for me to then try to write the neighbors' names next to everything. That's just too small to work with. So what I did, and again, you may have decided to convert it differently, and that's totally your call. But what I did is I converted everything to feet, and then I divided that by the number of perches into feet. Because I know that perches, it's given the size of this land, it works well. So let's look at it. And also, there's an error on here. I don't have line number 5 in here, and line number 4 is actually line number 5. So that's going to give you the opportunity. We're going to go through line 1, 2, and 3, and then I'm going to have you convert on your own piece of paper line number 4, and then we'll do line number 5. So let's look at line number 1. It was 8 chains, and it was 39 links. So, now, where do you get your conversions? You get them right on... What's my favorite place?
Wiki.
Family Search Wiki. Thank you. And so, if we want to know how long a chain is, right here, 66 feet. If we want to know how long a link is, it's right here. 7.92 inches. I don't remember this stuff, or I'll remember it today because I've been working on it, but a week from now, I'm not going to remember it, but I know where I can look for it. And that's what you need to remember. You need to remember where you look for it. So, 8 times 66 is 528 feet. 89 links times 7.92 inches equals 704.88 inches, and then I divided that by 12, and I get 58.74 feet. If I add 528 feet plus 58.74 feet, I get 586.74 feet, and I round that up to 587 feet. Is everybody following me so far?
Yes.
And then I take that 587 feet and I divide that by 16.5, because that's how many perches are in a foot, or excuse me. Yes, how many feet are in a perch? Thank you very much. And it comes to 35.58. Is everybody following me? Can everybody understand this? So keep in mind, this is how I did it. You may want to do it a different way. You may want to, but sometimes it's even more confusing. I actually like putting it into feet so I get an idea in my own brain as to how big or little this piece of land is. And I knew it was too big for me to fit it on the graph paper, that it was going to make it unwieldy. So then I'm dividing it by 16.5, and that makes it much more reasonable to start to graph. So let's go through the next one. Again, line 2, 8 chains times 66 feet is 528, exactly the same as above. But then it's only 50 links. So 50 links times 7.92 inches equals 396 inches. I'm dividing that by 12 to get the number of feet. So then I add 528 feet plus 33 feet, and I get a total of 561 feet. And then I divide that to get it back into perches, and it comes out to 34 perches.
Why do we want perches again?
because if I tried to do it in feet, I wouldn't be able to graph it. Do you want to start measuring out? Because we are going to do in millimeters. We're going to use millimeters for every perch. This is not the USGS scale. But again, if I did a USGS scale, we'd be looking at something like that. That's too small. If I was dealing with a larger piece of land, and the USGS scale might be that big, then yeah, I might. And you are going to get all the measurements to divide something by the USGS. That would be, I believe, 4.8. You divide purchase by 4.8. So do you see how it's making it even smaller? Mm-hmm. So let's go through line 3, and then I'm going to have you calculate line 4. So line 3, it was 13 chains and 84 links. So 13 chains times 66 feet, you get 858 feet. 84 links times 7.92 inches, you get 665.28 inches divided by 12 to get to feet. You get 55.44 feet. And then I am rounding down 55.44 to 55. And then 858 feet plus 55 equals 913 feet. That's not in there, so you want to write that in.
913?
913. That, I left that out.
Well, here.
Yes. And then you see down below, I'm taking 913 feet divided by 16.5, and I'm getting 55.34 purchase. All right, why don't you calculate now line 4? And just so you know, that last line on there, I have it marked as line 4. It is not. That is line 5. So you might want to correct that on your answer sheet. I'll tell you what, I'll correct this answer sheet, include line 4, and send that to you. But in the interim, can everybody start calculating line 4? Okay, all right, let's go over it. What's the first thing you want to do? What are we doing? Can someone?
I'm going to. 12 chains times 66.
Right, and what do you get?
792.
Excellent, okay. What's the next thing we do?
45 links times 792, which threw me off.
45 links times 7.92, what do you get?
356.4.
Then what do you do?
Divide by 12.
Excellent. And what do you get?
29.7.
And what do you do with that 29.7?
I rounded it to 30.
Excellent. Okay. And then last step, or second to last step?
Add the 792 and the 29, or the 30.
Yep. And you get?
822.
822. And then what?
Divide
it by 16.5. And what do you get?
49.
48.8.
Oh, I rounded up.
Right.
49.8. Do you round it up?
You round it up. Okay. All right. Okay.
I have a quick question for you.
Yes.
When you're rounding, where do you actually want to round within your math? Because I didn't.
You
round.
Always you do it when you're rounding numbers. If it's 5 or above, you go up.
Right, right. But I meant like in your calculation as far as.
Keep in mind, we're dealing with something that's this big.
Okay.
So, honestly, it's not going to make that significant a difference.
Okay.
What you're trying to do is get the overall shape of something. Because, in essence, meets and bounds, it's a puzzle. It's a puzzle piece. And you are then going to try to take that puzzle piece and fit it into, anchor it onto a map. All right? Okay, so at this point, I think we're going to take a break. And then when we come back, we're going to start graphing it onto our graph paper. So what time is it? Hold on, I can never read that. Okay, why don't we come back in 10 minutes, okay?
Okay.
Anybody have any questions? I'm more than happy.
Just wondering why you do the conversion separately and change some things. I've done a lot of things, and what I do is make it 8.89 James. Can you make it 8.89? Because there's 100 James. So we
know they're not. Hold on, I've got to check myself again. I mean, honestly, for me at this point, my feeling was,
then you're just counting squares.
Okay.
Rather than trying to make it into millimeters on here.
Yeah, but here's the thing. The issue is then you have to try, you're trying to, it's better to work with the measurements that they have rather than, like, when you're talking
but
about...
But I just ended up with measurements, with the measurements that they have. Right. I'm now in purchase and not changing.
You are absolutely right. But if you do the number of purchases just by the millimeters, then you get a nice size.
Yeah, but all I'm saying is when you do that, what you're really doing is just choosing the scale.
Oh, and you can choose whatever scale you want to do.
But I think it might be clearer. It might be clearer if you figure out a way to just explain. I have the measurement in feet. All right, or in some unit. Now I'm going to choose a scale, which is how many of those units correspond to one square on the graph, and then I just start counting squares and then fractions of squares, and have a ruler that matches up with the squares because they don't always go, things aren't always rectangles. I think that might be easier. But again, this is more I'm sort of thinking out loud rather than actually doing it.
Let me explain what I mean. Every day is different. I mean, there's one in researching, what is her name? Researching in North Carolina. Oh, she's a big genealogist. Why am I blanking on the name? Frank, who wrote Researching North Carolina, North Carolina Research, the genealogist. She's before, she was a big one before Elizabeth Shonecoss. Is it Helen?
Helen
Lear. One of the things that she recommends is trying to get a particular size graph paper.
Yes, I can. That would be another.
Yes, so everybody's going to suggest a different something. And I think the reason why they suggest a different something is depending on the geographic area where they are doing the most deed platting. Because in that particular area, you're going to mainly get purchase, or you're mainly going to get change of lands, or you're mainly going to get, fee, or you're, so everything, you are going to find different things on different fees. So more than anything, and again, you're right, we are converting everything to all, but I wanted people to get comfortable with just having to make these conversions. And doing it step by step by step. What you are saying is absolutely accurate.
All right. Well,
here's the thing. In most cases, you won't be doing this by hand. You'll be doing it with deed mapper.
My guess is it's not.
Deed mapper is.
I use meets and bounds myself.
What?
I use meets and bounds myself.
No, deed mapper, you use meets and bounds.
No, there's a program called meets and bounds.
Oh, okay. All right. Yes, that's right. Yeah, so they have meets and bounds, they have deed mapper, and you just plug in the numbers. But before you start doing that, you really need to understand exactly what you're doing. Mm-hmm. So that's why I'm here. And hopefully, we might be able to do the next week and not with all the technology issues that are happening.
That's just out of order in my mind.
I have not been able to use my computer.
I used to be able to
use it up until 3 weeks ago, and now suddenly you're having major technical issues. So I've been trying for 3 weeks to get them to clean that start.
And this is because of their network connectivity?
No, it has nothing to do with it. Oh, yeah. Our computer is up to this. So then all of a sudden,
it's an AV problem.
It's an AV, yes.
It's an AV problem.
So if I can project it, if I want to type it, I have to use this computer, which does not have a word response, which does not have to use it.
So we shouldn't be running our computers.
Right. This is just if you want to try and project what's on your computer.
Yeah, but on the
Also, if I want to drag around the screen with me, that's how it's working. All right.
Every presentation I went to where everything worked except for the AV or the sound. You know, I'd be retired fully.
It's
new. You'd be retired well if you have a solution, so it never happened anymore.
Okay, let's get started. All right. And we're.
Okay.
Jesus. Why is that making noise? So now we have our conversions. All right. This is your land measure compass with an arm, northeast, southeast, southwest, northwest. The compass quadrants. Frank went over all of this. The way we use this is what you are going to do, you are either going to start your arm either in the north position or the south position. Whenever you start this. Okay, so if we were going to measure north 67 degrees east, first of all, you would take your compass and you would line it up on your graph paper. So you have picked a point, and you can even make a little X on your graph paper. You are going to take the circle of your compass and put that over it. And I would make sure the other thing you want to do is you want to make sure that the lines are parallel to your graph paper, because otherwise, if you don't, you're going to get things that are a little wonky. Does everybody understand what I mean by that? Okay. So if you have your compass and you're putting it over the X, you see this east-west line. It is lining up exactly with the line on my graph paper. And I'm looking at the red lines. They are running exactly parallel from the bottom of this red line to the top of the red line. All right? So, we're putting the X. We're putting the compass right over the X. Then we are moving. Okay, I understand that this picture already has the arm move, but look at the red rectangle. So I'm starting north because that's what it says right up there. I am then moving my arm 67 degrees to this point here, and I'm moving east. So that is north 67 east. And that's where it would be, and then I'm going to put a dot there.
Did I miss where we get in those coordinates from?
This is just a sample coordinate. They are not the same as the ones that you have. This is just an example. Okay? Does everybody stand that? So, let's go back. If it were south, we would start down at the bottom. And if it were southeast, we'd swing our arm that way towards the E. If it was southwest, we'd swing our arm and we'd count 67. If this was south, 67 east, we'd start with the arm down here, we'd swing it to 67, and we'd put a dot there. If it were south, 67 west, we'd start with arm down here, we'd swing it west, 67 degrees, and put a dot there. Let me go back. Is everybody understanding this? Anybody confused? All right. All right, make sure you are using, we are going to be using, this is a 6-inch ruler, and we're going to be using the cm side. We're measuring in millimeters. You're using cm side of the ruler, that's this one, not the inches. There are 10 millimeters to 1 centimeter. Okay, so at this point, now, I see this is the inches side. Trying to get pictures of this sometimes can be a little bit difficult. So pretend, if you will, that this is the millimeter side. Can everybody do that? And then you would measure to the point that it's saying. In this point, it would be 55 perches. And you put a dot there. You don't run it out to this dot. You put it to the one where you're measuring the distance. This dot just determines the angle of the line, and then you measure the length. The next one we would do, we would then put the center of our compass right over the last dot we made. And then you start the process all over again. So let's do it with the first one. With the first reading, this reading was south 11 and a quarter east. So where's the arm on your compass going to be?
South.
Starting at the bottom, and you put it right, and always, you are always going to put your compass north. You are never going to change that. You're not going to be tilting it this way for the next angle. You always keep it like this. So put it over your X, wherever you have determined that on your page. Yes?
Could you just give us a hint? Are we doing like the lower left so that we don't run off the page? Lower left, upper left.
You actually are fine right smack in the middle.
Okay, thank you.
Again, another reason why I decided to do it in purchase. So, if you want, and again, I think it's much harder when you're learning something like this and you're under pressure. Please, if you didn't get this shape, can you please go home and try it one more time? In the quiet, convenient, private place where you feel most comfortable. But take your time and remember, it is a two-step process for every line. You have to first determine the direction the line's going to go, and then you have to measure how far that's going to go. And then once you determine that place where the line stops, you make a dot, and you put the center of your compass over that. And you just keep going. Now, when it really gets tricky is when the recorder of deeds has made a mistake in the legal land description. And one of the things that you can do, I don't have
it in the slide.
Sorry, I do not like this computer. Let me back up here. We are in New Jersey. I'll tell you, we were originally in Pennsylvania, and there were enough people that had already plotted the one that was a really good example in Pennsylvania. Okay, so what was my... I was going back to...
When there's a mistake.
Okay, great. So when there's a mistake here, one of the things that you need to look at is the first one is always going to be south or north if you are looking at it this way. If it's not, that should get your attention. And if we're starting with a south or north, the next one has to be an east or west. Now, different surveyors may do this differently. As Frank talked about, they may just go north by northwest. And then you have to use the compass and figure out how many degrees that is and start doing it. Is everybody following me? But again, when you're first trying to do this, I don't want to throw that one in there. But you do need to make sure. So when you look at that, that's going to give you a tip-off. All right. Let's go back.
So you're saying it starts with north or south because it typically started due north. That's the progression of things where it begins due north and they go from there.
Oops. Well, because when you are doing this and you're starting to plot it out, it's either got to start from north and move that way, or it's going to start from the south and move either this way or that way. Again, you're trying to get the angle, the direction that the line is going to shoot off from that point. Everybody, again, you may have to sit with this, plot it again at home. Think about if you were walking the land. We're not getting magnetic compasses involved in this. Just this drawing, okay? So, if you are starting from a point and they're saying, all right, you are starting north and you're going to go east, so many degrees, that's the direction I want to walk. And I'm going to walk how many feet or poles or chains or links or whatever. And then I'm going to walk as far as I'm supposed to go. And oh my gosh, it takes me to behind. That's it. And then it's saying, all right, now start south. So I'm going to face south. And it says, now turn. East, thank you. And so many degrees. And I'm going to take it way up, 86. And then I'm going to walk in this direction for, it's going to tell me, 30 feet, let's say. So I'm going to walk 30 feet. And then that's my next dot. So does everybody understand? You really need to think about this. All of a sudden, it's like your high school geometry coming into play.
I had to do this in high school geometry.
You had to do this in high school geometry. Way to go, that geometry teacher. What I loved is when finally a teacher would give you a problem that you could really apply to real life. So, all right, now then. So now we have this wonderful drawing. The next thing is, okay, where is this? Where is this in Burlington, New Jersey? So one of the places you want to go to, one of my favorite places, and I have it on your handout, is the Library of Congress map collections. Why? Because one of the things you want to do that's really, really nice is you want to find a nice historic land ownership map. Why? Because that gives you a really nice tip-off. Because if you can find a nice land ownership map that is close to the time period that you are looking, you may be able to see some of the same neighbors or even your person on there. And you might be able to anchor it that way. Now, it does get confusing, and I'm telling you right now, this is not scaled to the way it's supposed to be scaled. But you would then have to take the scale of that map and convert your drawing to the scale of that map. Now, Michael made a very good point that, well, shouldn't you be looking at that scale of the map before you do your conversion? Yes. But at this point, I'm trying to just teach you how to do it on a piece of paper that you can see the shape, and it's not too big and it's not too little. So, I'm going to the Library of Congress, and what I did is I put in here, up at the top, I went to their map. I went to their map page, and I put in Burlington, New Jersey, and I hit enter, and all these wonderful maps come up for New Jersey. The reason why I go to Library of Congress first, these maps belong to us, everyone. They are ours.
So can we flip the lights off?
Oh, sure. Actually, can you get it right over there? That would be swell. It's a, no, right behind, right there, Michael.
Are you talking about the link that says geography and mapping?
If you just go Library of Congress, you see how it says loc.gov/maps? If you just put that in, loc.gov/maps, and it's in your handout. I have a link to it. But it's Library of Congress. And you go in there, and if you put the slash maps, you can put loc.gov, and that'll take you to the Library of Congress. And if you haven't put in the maps, then you just go up here, and you indicate, this is the format I want the maps. And then you put in Burlington, New Jersey, and you hit search. And in this case, all these lovely maps came up. I'm going to, since I am trying to find, this deed was dated 1847, I found a nice map here, a land ownership. It says sites, household names, and it's 1849, so that's the one I'm going to go look at. And when I start going into it, I'm going to click in. Zoom. To Burlington. What do we see right here?
Oh.
H. Mahan. Now keep in mind, this was 1847. This is 1849. He's selling some of this to Dugdale. So, hold on. Where's my clicker? There it is. I have to go back. I want my own computer. Okay. We're nice and close. Now, some of these may not be correct in terms of being up to date. But again, I would need to scale this. But look who we see. We see Rogers. We see H. Deacon. We see an S. Weatherall, a J. Weatherall. We see J. Weatherall over here. These land ownership maps are not going to be perfect. They may get initials wrong. There's another one that he's called Mahan here, with a D on the end. So, again, it's not going to be perfect, but it's a way for you, it is, quite frankly, a down and dirty way to anchor your land in, and if you get enough neighbors and or running along the road, the example that I gave in Foundations 2 was wonderful for me because it ran along one road, it had a corner, and ran along another. So I knew that this corner fit right into that road. So that made it very clear. So I would like you, how many of you have deeds of your family members? Have you platted them out? All right, I'd like you to try to go home and do this one step at a time. You may not be able to do it right, but try it, bring it in. We'll take a look at it together, and we'll see what you can do. Go to Library of Congress. There are other websites, and I've given them to you in that handout, that have historic maps. This example was New Jersey. I know this is measuring your Pennsylvania ancestors. The one I had was Pennsylvania, but there were too many of you who had done it before, so I wanted to give you something different. And again, one that's not too hard, but is challenging. So I hope you will try that. If you have any questions, I'll be here next week. We're then going to talk about USGS maps and Google Earth. But how many of you have deeds? I'm going to count your hands. One, two, three. Family deeds at home. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine. Okay, that's nine of you. So I'm hoping next week there will be nine of you that are going to show me a drawing with, hopefully, you will be able to find a corresponding land ownership map. I do want to tell you the height of the land ownership maps was from about 1850 to 1890 or 1900. By 1900, there actually became too many people, and they stopped doing it. Yes, of course I'm saying they stopped doing it. No, they didn't completely stop doing it, but you will not see as many of them out there. So give that a try at home. Again, make a step. See if you can find where they are. All right. And for